Blog Talk Radio.
Did you know there's a secret place to expand your mind? A place to escape the same old negative news? Welcome to Colombo Chronicles Live with Rose Colombo, award-winning author, cable TV and radio host, poet, and advocate for justice. Rose has been seen and heard on local and national TV and radio. She's consulted with victims of injustice for more than 20 years. Her articles have been published in major and local newspapers and magazines. Listen live as Rose Colombo welcomes prominent authors and experts to her podcast every Wednesday from noon to 1 p.m. Pacific time at blogtalkradio.com/Colombo Chronicles. You can call in and ask questions at 646-564-9742. Follow Rose Colombo every Wednesday from 12 noon to 1 p.m. on Colombo Chronicles Live at blogtalkradio.com/Colombo Chronicles.
Hi, everyone. This is the Rose Colombo. Welcome to Colombo Chronicles Live.
Colombo Chronicles Live. Colombo is on their trail. Listen up at Colombo Chronicles Live.
That's right. Listen up, because today is Wednesday, and we're here for you every Wednesday, live from 12 to 1 p.m. That's on the good old West Coast, and that would be 3 o'clock on the East Coast, and you have to check your time in your state or your country. And we welcome all the countries around the world who listen to Colombo Chronicles Live. And just to let you know, all shows are archived, so you can always come back at your convenience and listen to your favorite author and your very special topic. We talk about love, we talk about business, we talk about health, we talk about world events, we talk about corruption, the Constitution, what's happening in our country and other countries around the world. So you have a variety of experts, authors, and topics to choose from. And I just want to say, wake up, America. Is the American dream on the verge of the American nightmare? Well, in America, it appears that our economic system is doing quite well. Businesses are doing quite well. People are working. And we want to thank our President of the United States for making that happen and bringing companies back to our country and being interested in helping small businesses being funded in all communities, no matter if you're in inner city or if you're in a middle class or upper middle class neighborhood. Businesses are picking up and more people are hiring. So that's good news for America. Not so much in Venezuela, Chile, and other countries where they're struggling. We really pray for all of you who are struggling around the world. And we always hope and pray that you will maintain or seek freedom, liberty, and rights in your countries, just like we have in the good old USA. Nothing like freedom. Freedom to think, freedom to do what you want to do, be what you want to be, go where you want to go, earn as much money as you want, and set your sights on to reach that American dream for all people inside the good old USA. But we also help people around the world, and that is a good thing. So we do have random acts of kindness inside the USA, and we also use our taxes for random acts of kindness around the world. And it's really interesting because Wake Up America has been my opening statement for nearly 30 years when I was on AM, FM radio stations. And it's been my my coined little phrase even on podcast radio. But I didn't know that the term Wake Up America would take off in recent years. Everyone, it appears, has been using Wake Up America on social media. And I believe someone even wrote a book entitled Wake Up America. So I've always been ahead of my time. it appears, whether I was thinking about the value of property as a young girl or thinking about gold and silver values and as investments and concerned about our nation and injustices and even the changing of seasons or starting up a skincare business in my kitchen in my younger years when Americans thought skincare was only for the rich. Until recently, after the new millennium, skincare became more popular and more affordable for everyone. At the time I started my business, I didn't have to work. I was married with kids, and I was married to a successful businessman. But most women in the 90s were not creating businesses or even thinking about college because there wasn't any child care centers, and most women had gotten married young, and they had children to think about. But I wanted something I created to fulfill the missing part that I felt in my life, and I think there's a lot of women who feel that way when they reach their late 20s and their early 30s. And today, we are going to enter into the world of authors and experts in just a couple minutes, and we have a fabulous author today and who will be entering into the world of authors and experts. She is a fabulous guest, and she wrote a page-turning book entitled Diamonds and Scoundrels. And the author's name is Adrienne Rubin, and she's here to tell us about her experiences and how she became involved in the diamond business when it was dominated by men. So we'll take a little break, and we will come back, and I'll tell you a little bit more about our special guest, Adrienne Rubin, and her book, Diamonds and Scoundrels, in just a moment. So don't touch that dial. We'll be back in just a moment.
Howdy, folks. Just stopped in by my favorite restaurant, the Horseshoe Cafe. I highly recommend the home-cooked hot meals and piping hot coffee. In fact, it reminds me of my mom's home cooking when I was growing up. The customer service is excellent. Be sure to save room for the world's best desserts. Make sure you try a slice of fresh homemade pie. The Horseshoe Cafe is located at 154 East 4th Street in the heart of Benson, Arizona. The Horseshoe Cafe is right outside of Tombstone, Sierra Vista, and Tucson. Sometimes Patty and Mike stop by to welcome you. The staff at the Horseshoe Cafe looks forward to seeing you. Stop by to eat or relax. Cool down in the desert with a cold beer or your favorite cocktail. That's the Horseshoe Cafe. Oh, and don't tell anyone I told you, but some people think it's haunted. One thing is for sure, be sure to bring your appetite.
Columbo Chronicles Live. Columbo is on their trail. Listen up at Columbo Chronicles Live.
That's right. Listen up because we're about to enter into the world of authors and experts. And today we have a wonderful author. Her name is Adrienne Rubin. She has a page-turning book, Diamonds and Scoundrels, hot off the press. And just to tell you a little bit about Adrienne Rubin, she enters into the male-dominated jewelry business, and she's thrust into a roller coaster journey full of triumph and defeat, betrayal, heartache, and challenges that can only be overcome by sheer tenacity and perseverance of will. This is an inspirational memoir. It shares revealing details about an often secretive and misunderstood industry as it follows the path of an inspiring female, a maverick, whose tireless dedication to self-realization through business and unwavering faith in family allows her to navigate treacherous waters across these and across 3.5 decades and ultimately achieves hard-fought success. This is very exciting for women, and it should be intriguing for men, especially married men and successful men, or men who are thinking about getting married. and how to treat a woman who is dynamic and wants to be independent as well. So let's just get started, and let's say hello to our very special guest, Adrienne Rubin. Hi, Adrienne. Welcome to Colombo Chronicles. We're so happy to have you here today.
Hi, Rose. I'm very happy to be here. Thank you.
Oh, you're so welcome. You know, diamonds are a girl's best friend, and I believe they still are, right?
Of course they are. Of course they are.
But diamonds can also bring scoundrels, right?
That's for sure. Well, of course, because they're costly and for many other reasons as well.
Exactly.
I didn't get involved in diamonds in the beginning. That was not on my radar. I didn't even imagine being in diamonds. I thought I would just, sell a few trinkets of jewelry in my spare time while my children were in school. But it didn't happen that it was going to stay that way. Not at all. And
And Adrienne, you were like in your 30s, right? Your early 30s,
yes.
When you decided
yes.
that there was something missing. So prior to that, what did you do when you were married and prior to getting involved in the diamond business? What was your career and what was your life like?
So I was a school teacher. And in fact, I was teaching French and English in junior high and high school, and I decided after I had two children that I really couldn't work full-time anymore. So I stopped teaching, and I was pretty miserable while my kids were in school. I felt kind of useless, like, what am I doing with myself? I would really like to have purpose in my life. Because already I have, thank God, a wonderful husband, a great family life, and a good wage earner. But who am I and what am I doing on this earth? And so I don't know, I was looking for something to do. And it just turned out that I started selling small pieces of silver jewelry and then gold jewelry. And then I started to expand as opportunities came my way. And I added a few little sapphire and ruby things. And pretty soon I was adding diamonds to the jewelry.
That's a good thing. So, Adrienne, prior to that, though, you were interested in cancer fundraising for cancer. Can you tell us a little bit about why were you interested in fundraising for cancer, how you got involved, and a little bit of that story as well that you touch on in your book?
So, yes, well, that was in the very beginning. I had an acquaintance who lost a 2-year-old daughter, can you imagine?
No.
Childhood cancer, and it was just devastating. And at that point, we formed a charity, and we started treating children with cancer here in Los Angeles. And we did that, and we were very successful. The program still exists today at Cedars-Sinai Medical Center in Los Angeles. I did have a falling out with the people in that charity, unfortunately, and I do describe how that happens in my book. I would not call them a scoundrel as part of the Diamonds and Scoundrels, though. I ended up, because my husband has arthritis, and I ended up working for the Arthritis Foundation. And I've been doing that for decades. We started with telethons and whatnot way back in the day. And now, since I've been so actively working for the Arthritis Foundation, I decided to ride a bike and raise money on their California Coast Classic bike ride. And now the Arthritis Foundation is honoring me this Sunday at the Skirball Cultural Center in Los Angeles for my work raising money for the Arthritis Foundation.
Well, congratulations. You deserve that, and that's a wonderful honor. And so back to your book on Diamonds and Scoundrels. What did your husband think about your getting involved in the diamond business and going out into the world of business?
So this is the thing. My husband, who is such a fantastic man in every way, he wanted to see me be happy, and he could tell I'm frustrated because I'm not producing anything. I have no purpose. I have nothing to do while my children are nothing that would be productive, something that would help others in this world or earn any form of respect. And so when I started doing this, he just said, oh, good, good for you. And he was my champion all the way, no matter what I started to do. And when I got into trouble, he was there for me as well, because I did get into trouble when I sold diamonds to the wrong person, and I didn't get paid back.
My goodness. And so who's Mr. Roth, and how did he play a part in your diamond business?
Mr. Roth, well, it's funny. You meet people, and you never know where that introduction will lead. And Mr. Roth had a silver business, and he was in Mexico. And I went to Mexico with my husband on vacation right at the very moment that I had stopped working for the cancer fund. And at that point, I was bereft. I really needed a job to do. And also at that point, I said to myself, I was not appreciated when I did this charity work, so I am now going to make money for myself. But I didn't know what or where. And then Mr. Roth, when we were on vacation in Mexico and he had a factory there, he said, sure, I'll let you sell my jewelry. That was the start.
And so that was what piqued your interest and you got more involved. And so how did you end up selling jewelry to or get involved with Russia and the jewelry business?
Well, that was, I had been in business for quite some time, and it wasn't actually Russia. It was a man who was born in Russia and his son who was also born in Russia, and they came to the States, and they opened a jewelry company. But they had no money. I knew the father because he was really such a wonderful jeweler. He would stop by and I would give him a lot of pieces to make for me to sell. And so he was fabulous. So when he wanted to open his own business and he had no money, I gave him some money in exchange for stock in his business. And that's how I got involved with him.
Okay. And so were there people you got involved with, men who were scoundrels, who actually maybe took your jewelry or never paid you? Were there any incidents like that in your encounters with scoundrels?
Of course. Of course. I was naive and I thought, oh, my goodness, this person has a beautiful store and they have good customers. And, of course, I will check their credit, or maybe, in fact, in the beginning when I didn't check their credit, it was even worse. But even checking credit isn't always good enough when you are giving people gold and diamond jewelry to sell at retail.
Right.
So, yes, there were several. I described them in the book, Diamonds and Scoundrels. So I'm not going to tell you all those little stories now. You have to read the
book. Can you tell us one little story that stands out in your mind?
Well, there were truly many. The first story was with a woman who had a gorgeous store, and I didn't know she was a gambler. She had magnificent things to sell in her store, and I just gave her some 2-carat diamond, 3-carat diamond, because she told me she had customers. But she was a liar, and it didn't matter. It didn't matter that she owned a store with beautiful merchandise. It didn't matter that her husband was a shipping magnet in Japan. None of that mattered. What mattered was she took those diamonds that I gave her and pawned them in Vegas so that she could gamble. And that was the first huge lesson. And in fact, it did involve my husband, who's an attorney, because at that point I really needed him.
Well, you were lucky to have an attorney for a husband to help you out there. In fact, you said, I loved expensive things and enjoyed selling them, but that wasn't where the profits lay. A friend of mine warned me, if you sell to those who ride in limousines, you will ride the bus. But if you sell to those who ride the bus, you'll be the one in the limousine. That's very profound. I like that quote. And did you find that to be true?
Yes. Well, of course, it is definitely true. When you think about it, it's definitely true. The things that are inexpensive, everybody can afford to buy, and they do buy. And the things that are very expensive, you have very few customers for.
And so, did you travel, the name of your company was Avanti of California. So did you travel to the different shows, to the different jewelry shows, gift shows, or did you design jewelry, or, I mean, how intense did you get involved with your jewelry business?
So you go back to who I was. I was a French teacher, an English teacher. I was not a designer. But I had a really good eye for design. So I would travel. I went to the Basel Jewelry Show, which is the biggest jewelry show for dealers in the world. And it takes place in April every year in Basel. And I met up with some unbelievable designers. And I would import and sell for them. So I would obviously be able to import jewelry at an inside manufacturer's price and be able to make money by selling to dealers. Those people who are making it wherever they are, if they're in France, in Italy, in Hong Kong, in Lebanon, it doesn't matter where, the Bangkok, wherever they are, they're so busy designing and making and producing that they really don't, unless they have a super big company with a sales force, they can't make that jewelry available to us here. And that was my role. So I took those things from abroad and brought them into the country. And I did shows here, jewelry shows to jewelers, gift shows to gift stores. And that was how I was able to succeed.
And so you had to fly around the country to different shows as well. And so did you carry on your expensive jewelry, or did you have it shipped? I mean, because if your jewelry didn't arrive, as some luggage gets lost on air flights, how did you manage that? Because if you ended up at a show and your jewelry didn't arrive, that would be a major disaster. So for those who don't know about being in business and having to fly around to these different shows to see what is happening around the world and who you could meet and who you can hook up with at the shows to display your products and stuff, how did you handle the airports with your jewelry?
Well, in the beginning, but of course, I thought I can do it all, so I'll just carry my line with me. And way back in the day, you could get away with more than one or two carry-on pieces of luggage, and I did so. And then one day, I was stopped. I had actually with me four very small bags, but not that small, but small enough to fit in the upper compartment of the airplane, and I was wheeling them around on a luggage cart. And as I was boarding the plane with my ticket in hand, the agent said, "You are not getting on that plane with all those bags." And I just looked at her and I said, "But they fit perfectly, and I've done this so many times." And she said, "Well, those days are over." And they were. And so I had to, from that point on, either fly with another person so that we could each carry two, or fly or ship my goods with Brinks or some other courier like that.
Mm-hmm.
And
wow.
When you ship with Brinks, it's very expensive, but it's worth it if you are successful.
Exactly.
It's very risky. It's very risky. I remember when putting my bag through, you know, where you put your bags through the x-ray machine, and the woman back there in this very loud voice, she starts yelling as she's looking at the x-ray. She says, "What you got in here, jewelry?" And I thought, "No, I don't have any jewelry in there." I mean, come on, what am I going to say?
That's funny.
So then, yeah. Well, it wasn't so funny. It takes guts. It takes determination. It takes a lot of, you know, you want to do something. You have to believe in what you're doing. You want to just take the driver's seat and go for it, you know?
Exactly, because we're talking about a young woman here who jumped into a business that she knew nothing about at the beginning, and so you're having all these experiences, and one of the big experiences is traveling with jewelry, and that, you know, is very valuable, and so being safe is another issue as well, right?
Well, of course, sometimes the taxi driver, the Uber driver would say, "So, why are you traveling to Florida or wherever?" And I would say, "I'm going to the show." "Well, what kind of show?" I would say, "It's a gift show," or something like that. And they would say, "So what do you sell?" And I would say, "I sell gifts." What am I going to do? I'm not going to tell them. You have to have eyes in the back of your head when you are doing a business like this. And in fact, at one time, and I said this in my book, I was taking diamonds to somebody, and my supplier said, "Put the diamonds in your bra. Period. Don't worry about it. Just forget about it. They're in your bra. They're safe."
That's true.
Well, I guess, just so your readers know, the diamonds are in little paper folded things. You know, they're not just diamonds. They're in wrapped in papers.
Right. So that body was very, very valuable. more valuable than people would realize. So what did you mean in your chapter? What's it all about, Elfie? Because we all know about the movie. So what did you mean by that chapter 21 where you say it's all about, what's it all about, Elfie?
Well, this, you know, now we're getting into philosophy,
mm-hmm.
existence. We are existence and our essence. We are here on Earth, and we just, well, many of us have had this thought, and it could be religious or it doesn't have to be. Who are you? Why are you here? What do you make of your life while you are here? What did you do that was productive while you were here? And that's what that chapter is about. So I say, if you believe in something, stand up for it. It will define you. If you want to help others, help others. If you want to volunteer, volunteer. If it's a struggle, if it's a situation, if you have a handicap, for example, arthritis is a big handicap, or any of these other things, use your brains, use your God-given talents. And if possible, if you feel like being a risk taker, anything that will give your life purpose. That's what I mean. That's what you need to do when you are wanting to make something. And, you know, I made a lot of decisions in my life. Some of them brought heartache, and many brought me self-esteem, and many were helping others. I came to a point where I was wronged, and I had to fight for justice and ethics in business. And there is a value in fighting and taking risks and all of that. And my book is not just the inside story of a secret of business in the world of diamonds, but it's a story about how a woman or a man, anybody who has desire and who believes in herself or himself can go for it. And you don't have to sacrifice your family values. I didn't, and it did slow me down. But in the end, we're living longer, and we will get there.
I think that's fabulous, because so many people are afraid to fulfill their American dream or their personal or spiritual dream, and afraid to take the risk. But I also give credit to your husband, because many women are not in a position in their late 20s, early 30s, or even after, of being able to have a husband who is supportive of their dreams, of their spouse's dreams, and will support and share in that. So we also have to give credit to your husband as well. And did you ever, you know, did you ever have any romantic encounters where you were confronted by men during, because you're a very beautiful woman, so surely there must have been men who were interested in you.
Well, I'm sure, not just for me, but for all women. It happened all the time, continuously. And I think that this is very much in the news, and men are much more careful now than they ever were when they are approaching a woman, whether she's married or not. I always dressed professionally to give the impression that I'm not just some little girl or some young bluesy or whatever. I dressed professionally. I acted professionally, and I never encouraged it. And believe me, there are opportunities for every one of us. It's how you react that matters.
That's very good information, because there are temptations once you get into business for both men and women, and especially if you start becoming successful and earning a lot of money. There's all kinds of people paying attention to you suddenly. And so I think that's really good information for people to understand that it's up to you to keep your integrity intact and put your priorities
first.
Well, for
sure. And my husband, who I adore him. He is the best. There's nobody better. And why would I even risk losing him in my case? In many cases, even I know that women go and whatever. It was not something that I wanted to happen.
Well, good for you. And so if there was, of course we want everyone to read Diamonds and Scoundrels, but if there was some little message you would want to send to young women or even mature women who've always dreamed of owning their own business, what would you say to them?
Go for it. Just keep doing. You take one step in front of the other until you get there. And if there are setbacks there, so what? You just keep going. You fall down, you stand up again, for sure. And look, if you're a woman and you're a truck driver and you have an accident, that's not going to stop you, right? Because that's who you are. That's what you do. And no matter, there are so many women who want to be truck drivers or women who are contractors, for example. I have a friend who was very successful as a building contractor. She was highly successful building houses. And you have to just do it.
Especially when you're jumping into a man's world, because a lot of businesses are still dominated by men.
That's what I was trying to say. I mean, sure, you imagine women driving trucks or women building houses as being the contractor or women doing computer programming or even women architects. Because women, to be an architect, I imagine, you have to be pretty good at math. And there are plenty, there was even a movie about these wonderful women mathematicians. Women in the world of men, you can do anything you are capable of. You just have to want to do it badly enough and go for it. And all this stuff about the stereotypes. Today you have women surgeons, and I'm thinking about way long ago, Ruth Bader Ginsburg. She started when women weren't even attorneys and were lawyers, and today she's on the Supreme Court. So you will get there. Doesn't matter. Just keep going. Go for it.
Exactly, and that's very good advice, Adrienne Rubin. And I want to congratulate you. I heard you won the Irwin Award last week from the Book Publicists of Southern California for the Best Advanced Publicity Campaign of 2019 for Diamonds and Scoundrels, and My Life in the Jewelry Business. So congratulations on that. And so in closing, it's been a pleasure. What can you tell us about any websites you have, how people can purchase your books, or any events that are coming up?
So, my website is adriennerubin.com, and that's A-D-R-I-E-N-N-E-R-U-B-I-N. .com. It's spelled the French way. And that's one way to reach me. And you can find my book at the bookstores. It's in many bookstores all over the United States. And it's online at the same bookstores and also at Amazon, of course. And also, I would, if you are listening to this and you have arthritis, I would say please try to get involved in the Arthritis Foundation. They really are wonderful. And if you are in Los Angeles and if you could come to the Skirball on Sunday, that would be fantastic.
And the Skirball Ball is going to be held where and at what time?
It's at 5 o'clock on Sunday, October 27th, the Skirball Cultural Center on Sepulveda in Los Angeles.
Fantastic. And that's a very good cause, and I do hope people do do attend or support the Arthritis Foundation, because so many people suffer from arthritis. So thank you so much, Adrienne Rubin. You've been a pleasure to talk to you, and thank you so much for sharing your stories in your book. And I hope everyone goes out and gets a copy of Diamonds and Scoundrels. Check it out on her website, or go to Amazon.com or into your favorite bookstore. Thank you again, Adrienne, and God bless you, and thanks for all the hard work you do with the Cancer Foundation and the Arthritis Foundation.
Thank you.
You're
it's
so
a pleasure.
Welcome. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And Adrienne Rubin has left the building again. Her name is A-D-R-I-E-N-N-E and R-U-B like boy, I-N. Adrienne Rubin, her book is Diamonds and Scoundrels. You'll enjoy reading it. It is a page-turner. And on that note, we'll take a little break on Colombo Chronicles Live, and then we'll come back and talk about the issues of the day. So don't touch that dial.
Listening is an art. An art that humans are losing to the world of robots. Robots don't have any tone or human feelings. The addiction to communicate by texting isn't going away. People are feeling isolated, lonely, frustrated. People need people willing to listen to them. Can you imagine getting a text message that read, "You're fired," or "Hi, would you marry me?" It is happening. Colombo Chronicles is the option and the answer to human communication. Colombo Chronicles provides email access to your ideas and issues. Take advantage of this opportunity now. Go to ColomboChronicles.com. Click on subscribe today. Colombo is spelled C-O-L-O-M-B-O Chronicles. Fill out the form, submit it, bookmark and subscribe today. Remember the name, ColomboChronicles.com.
That's right, ColomboChronicles.com. And now we'll talk about the issues of the day. And one of the issues of the day, which is on everybody's mind, is the impeachment inquiry. And there is an article that says, "Finally, Lindsey Graham speaks out on impeachment inquiry." This is on Trending Politics. And the concern about the majority of the American people and the GOP is that these hearings are being held in secret and not for public review and not with transparency. They're being held in a basement. And there's an anonymous, mysterious whistleblower whose testimony and complaint triggered this impeachment inquiry, and yet he remains anonymous, and he does not want to testify from what we read online. He does not want to testify in public or under oath on the record and under penalty of perjury. And his complaint is based on hearsay, and hearsay, in my opinion, is no more than gossip. So it's kind of interesting that a secret hearing on a most important issue to the entire country that could overturn a 2016 election of a duly elected president by the majority of Americans is very serious, because if it happens now in secret hearings based on hearsay, it could happen in the future. And with keeping out the GOP members and even those who are on the committee of the military, they are not allowed inside these secret hearings either. And so it's a very unusual time in our country. And this article on Trending Politics says, On Tuesday, Senator Lindsey Graham finally spoke up about the ongoing impeachment inquiry against President Donald Trump by agreeing that the president was right when referring to the inquiry against him as a lynching. Now, lynching is a word that the Democrats have used in the past, the American people have used, writers have used. It's not just about down south, which was a horrible time, but lynching is a word that has been used as mob rule, and it has a symbolic meaning. It doesn't mean they're going to go out and hang someone, but it also is in the U.S. Constitution under the word of if you are a traitor found guilty of treason, you will be hanged. So, a.k.a. hanged. So, anyway, this article quotes, "I think it's pretty well accurate. This is a shame. This is a joke," Graham said to reporters. "This is a lynching in every sense. This is an un-American. I've never seen a situation in my lifetime as a lawyer where somebody's accused of a major misconduct who cannot confront the accusers, called witnesses on their behalf, or call witnesses on their behalf, and have the discussion in the light of day so the public can judge." Well, this is my thoughts, too, because I am a longtime advocate for justice. I wrote the book Fight Back Legal Abuse, featured around the world in major magazines, including the Daily Law Journal, veterans newspapers, and seen heard on major radio stations, and so forth. It was published in 2010. I'm now working on the second edition. But my experience helping victims around this country for nearly 25 years now, and being a advocate for persons attending court hearings, especially groups of people in every county, should form, and I still believe this today, which I did back in the 90s, formed groups of community persons who were concerned about our justice system, and we would meet at the courthouse, and we would go into different courtrooms and listen to the cases, and we would take a pad and a pencil or pen, and we would write down notes about what we thought about the judge and what we thought about the lawyers and how they were treated, and if we thought they were being treated fairly and according to the rule of law. And then we would hold meetings at the community centers once a month, and we would discuss the individual's notes and what we felt was an injustice and how we could correct an injustice. And one of the injustices that I'm seeing here as a longtime court monitor and public speaker and advocate for justice and award-winning writer on these topics during the 90s and early 2000s is very clear that due process of law is being denied. What makes America exceptional, if you want to know the real, true, and the key to being exceptional among the rest of the world and keeps us free and on track, not perfect, but on track, so that if there is an injustice, we can come back and appeal it? It's four words: due process of law. Due process of law, if eliminated, means we are a dictatorship, and we are no different than the socialist dictatorships or the communist dictatorships or the Muslim Brotherhood dictatorships around the world. Why do you think all these people are trying to flood into our country? They're flooding into our country because they're under dictatorships without due process of law. Due process of law was the key to our freedom from being suppressed, oppressed, and depressed, which I coined as SOD back in the 90s, SOD, suppression, oppression, and depression, which represents communist, socialist, and Muslim Brotherhood nations. Dictatorships cause people to suffer. They throw people in jail. They execute people. In China in the 90s, I don't know if they still have the death mobile today, but they would take you in the court. If you're found guilty, then they would just walk you right out to the death mobile parked in front of their courthouse. This is how dictatorships operate. They disarm the people, and then, of course, we know the result, genocide. Or they'll starve the people today, like in Venezuela. No one's paying attention. Those people are starving to death under that tyrannical dictator. So, due process of law makes America exceptional, keeps us free, and keeps checks and balances in order, whether it's on the political level or the Department of Justice or in the military. And when there are people in positions of power who declare that the Constitution is meaningless and they trample on and ignore their sworn oath, which is to uphold the United States constitutional laws, not ignore them, not change them, not rewrite them, not trample on them, not replace them with foreign ideologies, with socialism, with communist manifestos, with the Muslim Brotherhood Sharia law. That is all treason. There's treason. Those are traitors to the United States Constitution, to the United States flag, and to the American people, and to the American way of life. That is why we have laws. That's why we are a republic that operates under the rule of law, to protect us from tyranny, to be able to have freedom of speech, freedom, preserve freedom of speech, freedom of press, freedom of thought, freedom of opinion. We are allowed in the United States of America, under the United States Constitution, to have opinions, to disagree. But we must disagree in a civil manner, which we always did in the past, until recently, when there's so much violence, because if you wear a specific political shirt or a hat or jewelry or you express your opinion one way or the other, you could be confronted with a violent person or persons. That is not the American way. I don't know how we went off on this detour that's going right over a cliff, but we need to come back to the middle and be able to say we are the most civilized nation in the world. We are not violent because someone disagrees with us. That's why we're free to disagree in a civilized way. So when we do not have due process of law and we are having secret hearings and they're based on a mysterious secret whistleblower who's basing his complaint on hearsay, which is gossip, to overturn the elections of a duly elected United States president, we have to think about the future. Because if this is going to be as simple as it is for future representatives to hold secret meetings without public review, public scrutiny, public transparency, open hearings, and to shut out an entire congressional party and military from those hearings, that's a dictatorship. That means that people have taken over our country and are deciding by hearsay and gossip without transparency, without a whistleblower testifying on the record under the penalty of perjury. And if it can happen now, it can happen in the future. What's to stop it? A precedent will be set, and we are no longer a republic operating by the rule of law and three branches of government and checks and balances and due process of law is wiped out. You're guilty until proven innocent. Do you know how many people I know who went to jail or were accused of crimes and went to jail and had their lives destroyed, just like General Flynn, based on accusations only, circumstantial evidence only, or wrongful testimony, mistaken identity? This is a very dangerous path for America to take. Very dangerous. Not only because you don't like the president, so you think this is okay. You have to think about the future, because it's going to happen to him. It's going to happen to other presidents. They're just going to simply hold secret meetings based on hearsay and overturn the elections, which denies the American people their vote. So what's the point of having elections if you're turning your country into a dictatorship? And you no longer care about due process of law or about the rule of law or about testimony, evidence, justice, fairness, common sense, transparency, open hearings, and swearing an oath on the record, under the penalty of perjury as a witness. In any case, because if it's going to happen to the President of the United States, it's going to happen to you, and it does happen to you, only you don't know it, because it's happening to a fellow American. It's happening to fellow Americans in this country. People are going to jail based on accusations only, without due process of law. That means no lawyer, no trial, no judge, no jury, secret hearings, and a decision. Really serious, serious issue is occurring right before our very eyes today, where we are not. We the people are the government. And they are supposed to be representing us. That's why we elect them and hire and pay their wages. We are their employers. They are to represent the will of the majority of Americans, and they are to enforce the law according to the Constitution of the United States of America, not according to their disdain for a political person, or the political person's agendas, or because they don't like that person. That is not the way we operate the Department of Justice or senatorial or congressional hearings in the United States of America until now. This is a defining moment. This is a defining moment whether the American people want due process of law and their vote to be counted, or if they want the members of Congress to be able to easily hold secret meetings and overturn the will of the majority of Americans and wipe out our votes. Well, think about that, because it will affect not only us, our children, our grandchildren, and the future elections of the United States of America. So on that note, we have to close. God bless you. God bless America. I truly hope you'll think about due process of law and open hearings and how we are to proceed with our future elections in the United States of America if we are going to allow Congress to overturn the will of the majority of Americans and wipe out 60 million, 70 million votes. God bless you. God bless America. May God keep his hand on each of you and pray that civility in America will be restored.
Rose Colombo is signing off, and she's left the building. Be sure to bookmark and share Colombo Chronicles Live every Wednesday from 8 to 9 p.m. on the West Coast. Or if you're sleepless in the big city, that would be 11 to midnight on the East Coast. Rose Colombo says, remember, you're never alone when you tune in every Wednesday to Colombo Chronicles.